Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Chof Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In our previous shiur, we left off in the middle of a discussion that featured Rabbi Zeira's question. The general topic was dealing with ages of Torim and Bnei Yona as being acceptable for sacrifices. We had established that Torim and Bnei Yona that had reached a level of development known as Tchilas HaTzihuv, whereby the neck feathers were turning golden or yellowish, that level of development would not be acceptable for a Ben Yona, nor acceptable as Torim. As we pointed out in our previous shiur, Torim are acceptable only when they are adult, and Bnei Yona only when they are young. This state of Tchilas HaTziuv is neither young nor old. The question that Rabbi Zeira raised involved someone who accepted upon himself as a vow to bring a bird Ola offering, an Ola Sa'of, from either Torim or Bnei Yona, and he brought a Torim and a Bnei Yona, both at a stage of Tchilas HaTzihuv. The question is he going to be fulfilling his vow? Are we to view Tchilas HaTzihuv as an issue of doubt, that we're just not sure whether it's too young, whether it's categorized as young or categorized as old? And if that were the case, by bringing both kinds, Torim and Bnei Yona, both at Tchilas HaTziuv, he would have been covering his tracks, and he will be in fulfillment of his vow. Or do we say that Tchilas HaTziuv is a third category, called a Beria or a Bria b'fnei atzmoi, a separate category, and therefore it's not considered Torim nor considered Bnei Yona, and he would not be in fulfillment of his vow? At the end of our previous shiur, the Gemara came to a conclusion by virtue of the fact that it seems that a posuk is needed, min hatorim o min bnei hayona, to exclude Tchilas HaTziuv. It would categorize Tchilas HaTziuv as an independent category and not a point of doubt, because if it were a point of doubt, since klapei shamayim, since in heaven there is nothing that is a doubt, the Torah which comes from heaven wouldn't be recording or dealing with something or excluding something that is doubtful when in Shemayim there is no doubt. Therefore, if the Pasuk is coming to exclude Tchilas HaTziuv Shebozeh v'Shebozeh, it must be that it is a separate category. The Gemara with which we continue today at the top of Chof Gimel is in effect a rejection of that conclusion. And a few words have to be spoken out, and this you can see in the Rashi on the second line from the top, where you see a dashed underlining, where Rashi said, "Ula'olam psulayo mishum sveika." Basically, the Tchilas HaTziuv is a function of doubt. We're not sure if it is categorized as young or categorized as old. And as far as the Pasuk is concerned, that has a separate role. So as far as Rabbi Zeira's question is concerned, it could very well be that it is a function of doubt, and this fellow would be yotze his vow by bringing a Tchilas HaTziuv of Torim and Bnei Yona, and as we said, he would thereby be covering himself, either it's young or old, and by bringing Torim, which are kosher as old, and Bnei Yona, which are kosher as young, he would be in fulfillment of his vow. As far as what the actual role of the pasuk of min ha-torim u min b'nei ha-yona, that is the role of the Gemara now, and it will point out that it is coming to, these psukim are coming to exclude from acceptability Torah and Bnei Yona that went through Revi'ah, which is bestiality, where a human being had relations with the bird, or it was, the bird was worshipped as an idol. The Gemara at the top. Before we go further, we should note that we have a long Dechiyah marking, the Dalet that you see encircled with the vertical dash line that goes down more than halfway down the page, constitutes a rejection of what the Gemara had concluded in the, at the end of the previous daf, at the end of our previous shiur, where there was a conclusion that the Tchilas Hatzil was a Bria B'fnei Atzmo. Here we are saying not so, and that the Tchilas Hatzil in fact is a Suffolk, and what the Pasuk's purpose is as follows: Ki itzderich kro limute nirba v'nevad. I need a special pasuk to preclude nirba and nevad from being accepted as kosher bird offerings. Salka daito chamina. Without this special exclusion, I would have thought, this is a pasuk regarding animal offerings. You see two words dashed underlined, moshchosam and mum. V'tono d'bei Rabbi Shmuel, komokom shenemar hashchosa, wherever you see the word hashchosa, or a variation thereof, like in our pasuk, ki moshchosam, eino elo dvar erva v'avodis kochovim. This expression alludes to two major sins. Sins involving immorality and sins involving idolatry. How do we know that? Dvar ervo dichtiv, ki hishchis kol basor es darko al oretz. In the time of the flood, of the great flood, in Sefer Bereishis during Noach's time, it says, ki hishchis kol basor. That's a reference to the fact that the entire society was deeply involved in a very loose and free moral lifestyle. By the way, it's interesting to note that oftentimes people who make offhanded references to the Torah as being something old-fashioned and not being up-to-date and modern, when you think about what you see as prevalent in many societies, loose lifestyles and free and rampant immorality, that in fact is more old-fashioned than the Torah. The Torah being given at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu offers guidelines in how to live a happy and meaningful life within boundaries of proper morality, and that proper and enjoyable lifestyle that the Torah suggests was predated by the more free and unbridled, loose morality that actually is quite characteristic of many places today. So think about that when one wants to categorize things as progressive or prehistoric. Recognize that in the time of the flood, this concept or free lifestyle without boundaries was actually characteristic of that society. And that's what this pasuk is telling us. Ki hishchis kol basor es darko al haoretz. Avodas kachovim is also alluded to when you see the word hashchosa. Dichtiv pen tashchisun v'asisem lochem pesel. We've dashed underlined the key word here too. And this is clear. This pasuk talks about the making of images. And the word hashchosa appears as well. So since the term hashchosa appears together with mum, we would think as follows: kol shehamum posel bo, davar erva v'avodis kochavim poslin bo. Anything that's subject to being unacceptable as a result of a blemish, so too it would be rendered unacceptable by virtue of immorality and idolatry. V'chol she'ein hamum posel bo, things that are not subject to ruination through blemish, ein devar ervo v'avodis kochavim poslin bo. Likewise,
Dvar Erva, immorality and idolatry, would also not pose a problem. That's a function of the relationship established in the Pasuk Kimosh Hasam, Bohem Mum Bom, where you see where Mum poses a problem, so Hashchasa will pose a problem. V'hani Oifois, Hoyovolo Pasuk Buhumumah. When it comes to bird offerings, since a mum does not render a bird offering, a blemish on a bird does not render it unfit, the Omar Mar, it has been taught, Tamus vezachrus bevehema, v'ein tamus vezachrus be'oifois. Tamus is unblemished. Zachrus has to do with established gender. Zachrus literally male. So the necessity of having something unblemished, and if a gender is dictated, that is true, that you have to have unblemished and dictated gender when it comes to animal offerings. V'ein tamus vezachrus be'oifois. Issues concerning blemish and gender do not bind, are not binding with regard to bird offerings. So I would have said, Amal, Devar Erva Vavadiskachavanami Lo Lifsol Bahu. Since the mum, the issue of blemishing, doesn't affect birds, I would have thought idolatry and immorality also will not affect birds. Therefore, komash molon, I need a special pasuk, namely min haturim umin habinei hayona, to exclude birds that were party to or subject to immorality and idolatry. That is the official role of the pasuk min haturim umin habinei hayona, and not to exclude trilus hatziuv shebozeh v'shebozeh. Boy Rebbe Zera. As we featured in our previous shiur, the triangles around Boy Rebbe Zera denote a common thread of questions that Rebbe Zera raises concerning things that are of an interim nature. How are we to categorize them? In this case, we have a nosei heading in the outside margin. Mahi ha'agdora shel palges. What is the category that is appropriate for the palges? And what's a palges? That's a keves begil shona ulifnei sheovar yudgimul chadoshim. This is a sheep in its 13th month of life. Within its first year, it's a keves. And there are parts of the Torah that talk about korbanos that one brings from a keves. Above 13 months, once it's a year and a month old, in other words, it's completed 13 months of life, it's then categorized as an ayil, the ayil being the adult sheep. Ayil often is translated as ram. So the known ages are under a year, that's a keves. Above 13 months, that's an ayil. What is the story with regard to a palges, the sheep in its 13th month? You'll notice that accompanying this question of Boy Rebbe Zera, we have a long question marking, the shin that's encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, that takes you down Amud Beis, about four lines down from the top of Amud Beis, shows that all of this material that's in, of Gemara that's opposite this vertical dashed line constitutes the question. Rebbe Zera will raise his question, but the Gemara will say his question is not going to be raised in the context of Rabbi Yochanan's Shita, because Rabbi Yochanan's opinion is very clear on the topic of how to categorize the palges. But, according to Bar Pado, whose name is underlined at the bottom of the page, within his approach, we will be asking our question. Boi Rebbe Zera, Ha'oimer harei olai oilas behemo min ho'ayil oi min hakeves. A person who accepted a vow upon himself to bring an ola sacrifice, an animal ola, and he mentions that he will bring it from either an ayil or a keves. And he brings a sheep that's in its 13th month of age. Vehevi palges, mahu. What is the din? Alibo de Rabbi Yochanan lo tiboy aloch. As far as Shitas Rabbi Yochanan, as far as Rabbi Yochanan's opinion on this matter, Rabbi Zeiro's question is not being raised. In other words, within the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, there is no room to ask this question. The Omar Ber Yahave, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the Palges is a third distinct category of creature. Disnan, we have a Tanaic source that refers to someone offering a Palges sacrifice. And it says, Hikrivoi, he offered, a person who offered a Palges, Mevi Olov Niske Ayo, he is to bring the accompanying offerings that accompany korbanos, those involve a meal offering and wine, those are the nesachim, he will bring along with the palges the nesachim that are dictated for a for an ayal, the ein oila loy mizivcho. If, let us say, a person had been obligated to bring an ayal or a keves beforehand, and he happens to bring a palges, he will not be fulfilling his requirement. The Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Oy la'ayol, this pasuk of Oy la'ayol is found in the context of nesachim. Those are the accompanying offerings in Sefer Bamidbar, the wine and meal offerings. The Torah uses the expression oi la'ayol, and that word oi is l'rabois es hapalges. The Torah itself is saying that we will include the palges as something that needs to have accompanying offerings. So from the fact that you have a Torah posuk including the palges, it shows that it is not a suffix, but rather it's an additional category, and the Torah is telling us this category requires nesachim. However, if he had an obligation to bring a keves or an ayal, since the palges represents a third category, he is not in fulfillment of his previous obligation. So Rabbi Zeira's question regarding how to look at a palges is not asked within the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, because within Rabbi Yochanan, as far as Rabbi Yochanan is concerned, it's clearly a separate category. Ki teboy aloch alibo debar pado. As far as Rabbi Zeira's question is concerned, his question can be raised within the context of the opinion of Bar Pado. De Omar, Bar Pado says, Maisi Umasni. He is to bring the accompanying Nesachim offerings, and he brings them in, and makes a condition, makes a Tanai when he brings the Palges. The Rashi at the top of the page, Maisi Umasni, the Svirole, Bar Pada is of the opinion, Sofeku. It's the palges is a doubt. V'ocho komibayalon alibu de bar pado, and our question here is, according to bar pado, b'may mistapek, what is his doubt? What is bar pado's doubt concerning the palges? Umay masni, and as a result of that, what will the nature of the condition that he makes when bringing the accompanying offerings, what will the text of his condition be? As far as the pasuk v'oy la'ayol is concerned, Rashi says, Dorish le v'drosh shachrin v'menochus, he learns from it something else that's featured in Maseches Menochos. But the question here is, how does he articulate the condition with regard to the bringing of the nesachim, the accompanying offerings? The Gemara goes on, Mi amrinon, do we say ayel v'keves masne beberya loy masne, simply because the palges is a suffix? So if it's a simple suffix, it's either an ayel or a keves. If that be the case, he will bring the amount of nesachim that accompany an aisle, a ram offering. The nesachim for a ram involve four lug of wine and two isaron of meal offering. If, however, he were bringing a sheep offering, a kevesh, that is, the young animal, instead of four lug of wine, he brings three lug of wine. So in this case, and of course he would bring one isaron of meal offering. So in this case, he would make a tnai and say that if this palges is an aisle, so all four lug go along with it. If, however, it is a keves, so then three of the four lug that I'm bringing will go with it, and the extra lug will be a gift. Oy Dilma, the Gemara goes on, Bebriya nami masne di Omar, and he will say as follows, I beria have leve kule nidova teku. If, however, it's a beria, meaning a third category, not a keves nor an aisle, so then the wine and meal offering that I am bringing won't be of any relevance to it. After all, Barpada doesn't say that the O'ayil comes to include the palges for Nesachim. Therefore, the Nesachim that he does bring, the meal and wine offerings that he does bring, would be completely gift-oriented, completely Nedava. So, that is the question that Rabbi Zeira is asking. So, to review the point, Rabbi Zeira's question of one who took upon himself a vow to bring an ola of ayil or keves and brings a palges, those korbonos, an ola of keves or ayil, require nisachim, and he ends up bringing a palges. How is he to bring the nisachim when he articulates his condition? Does he have to mention palges as being a third category, or does he say that it's either a keves or an aisle? If you, however, view the palges as a category unto itself, then the nesachim that he ends up bringing will not be relevant to it, being that it's a third category, and hence they would be completely nedava. The Gemara ends off by saying, Teku, that this remains unresolved. Another question of Rabbi Zeira, we feature this under our No Say heading in the outside margin. She'elas Rabbi Zeira, Hare olai lachme toda, min hachometz o min hamatzah, vehevi si'ur mahu. Person accepts upon himself to bring the loaves that are relevant to a korban toda. A korban toda is a korban that, in addition to the sheep that is brought, there are 40 loaves that accompany it. The 40 loaves are divided into two categories, chometz and matzah. 10 of the 40 loaves are chometz, 30 of the 40 loaves are matzah. Rabbi Zeira will be asking about a case of someone who brought, as an effort to fulfill his vow, he brought something called si'ur. Si'ur is dough that has been left a while, not too long, but is developing very early signs of fermentation. There exists a machlokes tanoim in Maseches Psochim concerning what is si'ur, what is meant by si'ur, and once you establish what si'ur is, then what penalty
would accompany it if one were to, let us say, consume it on Pesach when there's a chometz prohibition. The two opinions regarding Sior are the opinions of Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Huda. As far as how to categorize or how to describe this stage of dough development, Rebbe Meir says Sior is a situation where the dough is developing a whitish surface. It's called, in the Lashon of the Gemara, Hichsifu Ponav. Kesef is silver, or it could at times mean whitish. Hichsifu Ponav, a whitish surface. According to Rebbe Yehuda, Sior is a situation where it's developing cracks, which are referred to as karnei chagovim, literally the antenna of grasshoppers, something that's very thin, a thin crack that starts developing in the surface of the dough, would indicate, according to Rebbe Yehuda, that it has reached the Sior level. Using that as background, we now turn to the Gemara, but notice, of course, the marking that accompanies this. There's a long question marking that takes you all the way to the line at which the bold-faced Mishnah word appears. There will be numerous stages in trying to clarify under what circumstances Rebbe Zera's question is applicable. So that explains the long nature of this question. But as far as we are concerned, using the marking system, this long question indicates that all of this material is essentially lead up to the final point of understanding the question. As far as what the answer to the question is, that appears in one word. That will be teku, meaning that after we've spent so much time in trying to clarify the question, the answer will remain unresolved. Boi, Rebbe Zera. Ha'oimer, harei olai lachmei toido min hachometz oi min hamatzo. Someone accepts upon himself to bring toda loaves from, he'll bring either chometz loaves or matzo loaves. The hevi si'ur mahu, and he brings loaves that come from dough that reached the si'ur stage. The Gemara asks, si'ur deman, the si'ur according to whom? E siur de Rebbe Meir le Rebbe Yehuda. If you're talking about siur de Rebbe Meir, means dough that developed a whitish surface, and you're asking this question according to the opinion of Rebbe Yehuda. In other words, siur de Rebbe Meir will simply use as white surface, and we're asking about white surface dough according to the opinion of Rebbe Yehuda. Well, there would be no reason to ask this question, because matzo ma'al yosohi, as far as Rebbe Yehuda is concerned, white surface dough is matzo. It's still unfermented. E de Rebbe Yehuda le Rebbe Meir, if you're asking about siur of Rebbe Yehuda. Now, siur of Rebbe Yehuda is dough that has cracks developing in its surface, known as karnei chagovim. So if you're asking about karnei chagovim dough according to Rebbe Meir, that too wouldn't be the subject of a question when it's very clear to Rebbe Meir, chometz hu, that's full-fledged chometz. The e de Rebbe Meir, le Rebbe Meir, and if you're asking about white surface dough according to Rebbe Meir, well, that too is not grounds for a question, because midaloki ole chometzu. Rebbe Meir tells us that one who would eat white surface dough, or that which is baked from it on Pesach, he would be subject to lashing. That indicates that it is considered chometz. Elo de Rebbe Yehuda le Rebbe Yehuda mai. According to Rebbe Yehuda, well, we're asking about dough that developed cracks in it. According to the opinion of Rebbe Yehuda, what is the story here with regard to Rebbe Zera's question? My. How are we to view cracked dough with a cracking surface because of its, we'll call it, advancing development towards chometz?
How is it categorized? My Sveiko Havya Vinofik Mimonavshach. Is the dough with cracks in it an issue of doubt? Namely, it's either chometz or matzah, and since this person's vow stated he will bring either chometz or matzah, so either way he will be in fulfillment of what he vowed to bring. Oy Dilma Ber Yahu Velonafik, or possibly the seor development of Rebbe Yehuda, namely dough with cracks in it, according to Rebbe Yehuda, is a separate category. It's not chometz nor matzah, and therefore velonafik, he would not be in fulfillment of his vow. He who vowed to bring either chometz or matzah and ends up bringing seor would not be in fulfillment. The Gemara now rejects the question essentially, and says the Omer Avuna, Ha'omer Harei Olai Lachmei Toda. Someone who accepted upon himself to bring Lachmei Toda, Mevi Toda V'Lachmo. He has to bring the sheep and the accompanying loaves. V'Kevon D'Chayiv Lei B'Toda. And since he became obligated in bringing the toda, the sheep, and the breads, this guy who brought the seor doesn't know whether it's chometz, and if that be the case, then he would need to bring the matzah loaves. E matzah hu, or if the seor is matzah, the lacy chometz, that he would then have to bring the balance of loaves of chometz. So this person could not be in fulfillment whatsoever of anything. Once again, how can Rebbe Zeira ask a question of Harei Olai Lachmei Toda and expect, at least as on one side of his question, of his fulfilling his vow, when this fellow doesn't know what else he needs to bring? So what is the basis, or what are the circumstances of the question in which we can raise as a possibility his eventual fulfillment? Loi tzricha. It is necessary to raise the question under the following circumstances. The Omar, where a person said, Harei olai chalo, Liftor Toidosoi Shel Ploni. He says, I am accepting upon myself a vow to bring loaves in order to fulfill my friend's Toda obligation. In this case, he's not obligating himself to bring a Korban Toda. He is obligating himself to help his friend fulfill his Toda requirements. But still, even if that were the case, if this person, if that's what this vow maker had said at the outset, and he ends up bringing seor, he's not going to be helping his friend whatsoever. Sof, either way, ha lo yoda hai gavro I chometzu, the leisi matzo, the friend doesn't know whether the seor is chometz, that he would then have to bring matzah, because as we said, the Toda has both chometz and matzah loaves. So that if this were chometz, so he'd have to bring the balance in matzah, e matzah, or maybe the seer is matzah, the lacy chometz. So as we says in this case too, he's leaving things in limbo. So how in the world could you suggest that, at least in one, according to one side of the question, that there would be a fulfillment of the vow? Lo tzricha. The real question involves a case, the Lo Omar Liftor, where the vow maker never said he is going to bring loaves in order to help exempt his friend. This fellow simply said he is vowing to bring Toda loaves of either chometz or matzah, in no attempt to help someone else. But the question is, Mepak Gavro Yedei Nidro, the issue here is, does he fulfill his vow through the bringing of the seor? Nofik o lo nofik?
does he fulfill his vow? And that would be so if the seer is a pure suffek. So it's either chometz or matzah, and that's what this person originally obligated himself to bring, either chometz or matzah. And by bringing seor, he is in fulfillment because it's either this or that. Oy loy nofak, no nofik. Or maybe the seor is a third category, a burial category, and he would not be in fulfillment of what he said. He said to bring chometz or matzah, but the seor maybe is a burial, a third category. So by bringing seor, he hasn't brought either chometz nor matzah. Teku, this issue remains unresolved. The Mishnah deals with the Pora Aduma and Eglo Arufa. The Pora Aduma is an animal, a red cow, that's brought on the Mount of Olives on Har HaZeisim, Har HaMashcha, and it's slaughtered through regular slaughtering methods. And eventually the animal, the red cow, is burnt. Its ashes are mixed with water for the purpose of purification of those people that are tamei meis, that became ritually impure as a result of contact with a corpse. The Eglo Arufa is a ceremony involving the breaking of the neck of a calf in the event that a murder victim is found between two cities. The city to whom the corpse or the murder victim is closer, that city is obligated to bring the Eglo Arufa. The Pora Aduma and the Eglo Arufa are in effect things that are not really sacrifices, but they both have a type of we'll call it an atoning capacity, if you will. And hence they are taught together in this Mishnah, and also they're contrasted. Under our topic heading in the outside margin, we've written Pora Aduma b'shchita, Eglo Arufa b'arifa. The Pora Aduma is treated through slaughtering, and the Eglo Arufa through arifa, which is reminiscent of the way we dealt with the oaf, where we said we do malika mimul orpo. Arifa is a reference to the breaking of its neck. Of course, it's done differently than the case of the bird offering, but it's the same basic location, namely the back of the neck. Here we're talking, of course, about an egel and not a bird offering. The Mishnah, kosher b'pora, posel b'egla, that which is acceptable by the pora is unacceptable with regard if done to the egla, the calf. Kosher b'egla, posel b'pora, that which is acceptable by the egel is unacceptable by the pora. And now we have a braisa that elaborates. Tan Rabbanan, pora, b'shchita k'shera b'arifa p'sula. The red cow is considered processed correctly if done through slaughtering it with a knife. B'arifa, breaking its neck from the back of its neck would be unacceptable. The opposite is true with regard to the egel, the egla arufa. Egla b'arifa k'shera b'shchita p'sula. Nimseis, the result of this is kosher b'pora posel b'egla. That which is acceptable by the pora is unacceptable by the egla. Kosher b'egla posel b'pora. That which is acceptable by the egel is unacceptable by the pora. At this point, we see a new marking. We have a diamond, and we are going to suggest alternatives to that which we have just taught and find out why these alternatives cannot be accepted. So the Gemara says v'tehei pora k'shera ba'arifa. Notice we've dashed underline k'shera ba'arifa, which is in fact contrary to that which we just learned in the Mishnah and the Braisa. So we're raising this possibility or this alternative really in anticipation of it being rejected. But our interest will be based on what is the source for rejecting this suggestion. And with the markings, you'll notice we have a diamond in addition to Vitei Pora. We have on Chof Dalet Amet Aleph, you see Utehei Egla also with a diamond around it, and dashed underline after that, Ksheira B'Shchita.
once again a challenge to what we have learned. We have learned that the eglo cannot be done through shechita, and yet we are going to raise that possibility, and then we will find out how it's rejected. So the Gemara says, Utei poro, ksheira va'arifa, mi kal v'chomer. Let's apply kal v'chomer logic and conclude that the pora can be done through breaking its neck. As follows. Uma eglo shelo hukshura b'shechita hukshura v'arifa. Mind you, the ego, the egla rufa, which is not acceptable through shechita, but yes, acceptable through arifa. Pora shehukshura b'shechita, the para which is acceptable through shechita, eino din shehukshura b'arifa, certainly it should be acceptable through arifa, when you see that there's already precedent for arifa as being an acceptable method, as we see in the case of the egla. So with this logic, we would say that the para should be done, or could be done, through arifa. The Gemara responds, Omar Kra. Now, we have a number one over here, and this will be the reason for the number one is because there in fact is a second answer later on. But Omar Kra, the top of Chof Dalet Omar Aleph, it says in the Pasuk V'shachat V'chuka, you have two words in the Parsha of Pora Aduma. It says V'shachat, and you also have the word Chuka. V'shchita in Barifa Loi. Since you have the word chuka, this word is designed to indicate something that is binding. So since the word v'shochat appears together with chuka, that would tell us that shechita alone is the way to deal with the para and not through arifa. The Gemara raises a question. It challenges this. And you'll notice we have a long question marking the kuf that's encircled with a vertical descending dashed line to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, shows that all of the lines of Gemara opposite this vertical dashed line form the question. You just got finished saying that because of the word chukah, I am limited to shechita. The Gemara asks, and we should add here that as a result of the presence of a chukah, I am therefore not going to darshan the kal v'chomer, the logic that we suggested at the bottom of Chof Gimel Amud Beis. So the Gemara asks, is that really so? V'chol hecha dechsiv bei chukah lo darshinon kal v'chomer? Is it so that wherever the word chukah appears, that orders us to disengage from kal v'chomer logic? We find in the context of Yom Kippur, and we'll be more specific in a moment, we find in the context of Yom Kippur, the word chukah appears, and even so, there was willingness to darshan a kal v'chomer. V'tanya, and now we have a Tanaic source that spells this out. The word of introduction that's necessary here is that on Yom Kippur there were two goats that were brought. One was a Soyer Lashem and the other was a Soyer Lazozel. The Soyer Lashem was a goat offering, slaughtered, and had its blood sprinkled in the Beis HaMikdash. The Soyer Lazozel was sent out to a cliff outside of Yerushalayim, and its death served to atone for the sins of Israel. How was it decided which would be the Soyer Lashem, the one slaughtered in the Beis HaMikdash, and which one would be the Soyer Lazozel? So it was determined through the drawing of lots, known as Gorolos. The Gorolos established which korban, which goat is going to be the Lashem, and which one would be Lazazel. In general, the definition of a korban, or the establishing of the identity of an animal as being a korban was done through what's known as kriyas shem, by simply delineating, by stating, this is a korban ola. by word of mouth, if you will, by statement. With regard to Yom Kippur, the establishing of the Korban's identity was done differently. It was done through the drawing of lots. That is information necessary before we learn the source. We are pointing out that with regard to Yom Kippur, you do have the word chukah, vitanya, and we also have the following teaching. V'yasau chatos, and you shall process it, make it as a sin offering. The goat, the soyer, lashem. Hagorol oise chatos, vein hashem oise chatos. The lot drawing is what establishes it as a chatos, and not verbal declaration. Sheyachol, without this posuk of Yasol Chatos, I would have thought Vahalo Dinhu, that through logic I would have come out saying that verbal declaration certainly would work. Uma b'mokoim sheloi kidesh hagoro kidesh Hashem. In general, with regard to other korbanos, a gorol, a lot drawing, would have no consequence, have no significance. And yet, verbal declaration does have significance. Mokoim shekideish hagorol, like on Yom Kippur, with regard to the goat offerings, eino din shekideish Hashem, certainly verbal declaration should have significance. So, even though Yom Kippur has the word chukah written in its context, you see here a willingness to darshan a kal v'chomer, to develop kal v'chomer logic. So at this point, with the kal v'chomer in mind, we would say that verbal declaration should be able to establish the identity of the goats in question. Ah, Talmud Lomar v'aso chatos. Nevertheless, the Torah writes this, and from this we learn Hagorol Oisachatos Vein Hashem Oisachatos. It's the Gorol that defines the identity of the goats, and not verbal declaration. So after all is said and done, how do I know that only the Gorol works? Taimo Dekosef Rachmona Vaso Chatos, only because the Torah adds this expression. Ha Lav Hochi, had it not been for the expression of Sochatos, Darshinon Kal V'chomer, we would have darshined the Kal V'chomer, even though Chukah appears. If that be the case, then Chukah does not disengage a Kal V'chomer. If that's so, then we should have been able to conclude that the Pora could have been done through Arifa as well. So the question is, how does the Mishnah know that Arifa is unacceptable with regard to the Pora? The Gemara now answers. This is now the second answer. Miet Rachmona Gabi Eglo Arufa. There's a limitation expression. In the context of the Eglo Arufa, it says Zois Be'arifa V'ein Acheres Be'arifa. The word Zos appears. Zos is a limitation word indicating this, namely the Egel is done through neck breaking and not something else, including the Pora. Well, at this point we now turn our attention to the Egel, to the Eglo Arufa, and suggest something counter to the Mishnah. Utehe Eglo Kshero B'Shchita Mikal V'Chomer. Let it be argued that the egel can be processed through shchita, through kal v'chomer logic, as follows: Uma pora shelo hukshura barifa kshero b'shchita. The pora duma, which is not acceptable through arifa, is acceptable through shchita. Eglo shekshero barifa eino din shehukshura b'shchita. The egel, which is acceptable through arifa, then certainly should be acceptable through shchita. When in fact, when we have precedent for shchita acceptability, as we saw by the pora. How is it then that the Mishnah says that the eglo cannot be done through shchita? Well, Omar kro the orfu ho eglo. And this is also of a limitation nature. The arifa in b'shchita lo, The pasuk delineates and dictates that only through arifa can the egel be processed, and not through shechita. This is called, in this case, the strength of this limitation is through what's called shinolav hakosuv la'akev, as you can see in Rashi, namely the requirement of arifa is repeated on a couple of occasions in the parsha of Egel Arifa. So this repetition shows me or emphasizes that only through arifa and not through shechita. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.